I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Moscow is warning the U.S. over letting Ukraine strike Russian soil with longer-range weapons, AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
American officials say President Biden's shifting policy and easing limits on what Ukraine can hit with U.S.-provided systems. He'd ruled out the move for months over fears it would lead to a direct confrontation between Russia and NATO. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says the decision adds fuel to the fire. Deputy White House National Security Advisor John Finer says Moscow itself is to blame.
The fire was lit by Russia's invasion.
Finer's not confirming the shift, which comes after North Korean forces arrived in Russia and are apparently deploying to help push Ukrainian troops out of a border region. UK security expert Patrick Beery figures that helped drive the shift, but
I think it's too late to have a major strategic effect.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
The U.S. on Monday imposed sanctions on organizations and firms involved in illegal settlement development in the occupied West Bank, including a well-established decades-old group that has close ties with Israeli leadership. The U.S. Treasury Department sanctioned Amana, the largest organization involved in illegal settlement development in the West Bank, and its subsidiary. Amana is already sanctioned by Britain and Canada and is one of the major funders and supporters of unauthorized settlements in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Settlement tracking group Peace Now says its assets are valued at around 600 million Israeli shekels, or about $160 million, and that it has a yearly budget stretching into tens of millions of shekels. This is VOA News. Brazil is pushing for concerted action to alleviate hunger as it hosts a summit of the group of 20 leading economies amid global uncertainty over two major wars and incoming U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva welcomed foreign leaders to Rio de Janeiro's Modern Art Museum Monday and delivered an opening address that focused on fighting food insecurity. Heightened global tensions and uncertainty about an incoming Trump administration had already tempered expectations for a strongly worded statement addressing the conflicts in the Middle East and between Russia and Ukraine. A search and rescue effort is ongoing in Tanzania's commercial capital after a building collapse on Saturday killed at least 13 people. That's according to authorities who say dozens of others have been rescued so far. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Crews search tirelessly for survivors still trapped in the rubble of a collapsed building in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. More than a dozen people were killed and more than 80 were rescued, according to the country's president, after a four-story building in the city's Kariakou market collapsed on Saturday morning. Prime Minister Kassim Majaliwa on Monday told reporters rescuers remain determined.
This operation will not stop. It will go on until we can confirm that all the business people who were here have been rescued. We will be grateful to God if we manage to bring them all out alive.
Tapping sounds were heard on Sunday from within the rubble of the building, according to the BBC. Building collapses are not uncommon in many African cities where weak construction standards and lax enforcement persist.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. Russia vetoed a UN resolution on Monday calling for an immediate ceasefire in the war between Sudan's military and paramilitary forces and delivery of humanitarian aid to millions in desperate need. Russia's ally China supported the resolution sponsored by Britain and Sierra Leone, along with all other UN Security Council members. Russia told the council it vetoed the resolution because it should be solely the government of Sudan that should be responsible for what happens in the country. Sudan plunged into conflict in April 2023 when long simmering tensions between its military and paramilitary leaders erupted in the capital, Khartoum, and spread to other regions, including western Darfur, which was racked by bloodshed and atrocities in 2003. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. criticizes Russia's veto of a Security Council resolution protecting civilians in Sudan.
It's unconscionable that Russia would callously and cynically stand in the way of demanding these actions, actions to save lives in the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Burundi's opposition leader says presidential clemency for about 41% of the country's prison population does not include political prisoners. A call for parliamentary term limits in Zambia. Nigeria celebrates Miss Universe success amid citizenship controversy. Anglican church bishops in Kenya add their voice to criticisms of President Ruto's government.
We are dealing with people who are marginalized. We are serving the people who cannot afford even a plate of meal in a day. Someone has to stand in the gap for them, and that's where we come in.
And Senate Republicans ready for unified control in 2025 with new leadership. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, has criticized yesterday's veto by Russia of a Security Council resolution on protecting civilians in Sudan. The resolution, supported by 14 of the 15 council members, including China, urged the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces to honor their commitment to protect civilians and cease hostilities. Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield says it was unconscionable for Russia to stand in the way of a resolution intended to save lives in the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
It is shocking that Russia has vetoed an effort to save lives, though perhaps it shouldn't be. They claim it is because of Sudanese sovereignty, but Sudan supports the resolution. For months, Russia has obstructed and obfuscated, standing in the way of council action to address the catastrophic situation in Sudan and playing both sides of the conflict to advance its own political objectives at the expense of Sudanese lives. Today, the council would have come together to call for a comprehensive nationwide ceasefire, for increased protection of civilians and removal of obstructions to the unhindered flow of humanitarian aid across Sudan. Russia claims it is for and with Africans, but vote against the resolution supported by Africans. For Africans. We would have demanded that the RSF cease attacks in El Fasher, Jazeera, and elsewhere in Sudan, and call for both the RSF and the SAF to be held accountable for their commitments in the Jeddah Declaration. It's unconscionable that Russia would callously and cynically stand in the way of demanding these actions, actions to save lives in the world's worst humanitarian crisis. And we don't need to be lectured by Russia on hypocrisy, a hypocrisy that they exhibit every day in Ukraine, where Ukrainian sovereignty is not being respected and civilian facilities are being attacked daily. We're watching the situation closely and will continue to call out abuses and those who facilitate them, including clearly Russia. The Council must and should take action. We must continue to amplify the voices of Sudanese people who are calling for peace and prosperity, democracy and justice, and Russia can't stand in the way of that.
That's U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, speaking Monday at the United Nations. Anglican church bishops in Kenya have added their voice to criticism of President William Ruto's government. Last week, Roman Catholic bishops in Kenya criticized the government for what they called unexplained killings, abductions, and disappearances in the country, especially the murder of women. Some supporters of the government urged the bishop to focus on ministering to the flock and not to dabble into politics. The Right Reverend Professor David Kodia is the Anglican Bishop of Bondo. He tells me that the church represents Kenyans, some of whom cannot afford a meal a day or who are paying taxes but do not see the value of their taxes.
One thing is that the government has already decided to go its own way, execute its own agenda without consulting the people. And again, the official opposition has also been taken captive. You know, the official opposition is led by one former prime minister, Raila Amolo Odinga. But since they joined the government and they were given some slots in the cabinet, we have lost the official opposition party in the country. And that makes it very difficult even for members of his party who are in parliament to stand against the government and its excesses. So that's the reason why, as a church, we realize that unless we do something to confront the government, to change its ways of how they deal with the people, then there will be no one left to speak on behalf of the people.
Bishop, I listened to, I think it's one government official who said, you, the church, you have access to President Ruto. Why did you not just go and seek a private meeting with him and raise this issue instead of going public?
We had seen him before and we had talked with him before. But later, he decided to go against all the things we had agreed on. That's why this time we said, no, we have to bring out some of these issues which you had discussed with him before. And he failed to address.
Did I hear that, if necessary, that the church is ready to lead protests?
May I tell you, we have so many ways of leading that. Protests may not have to be violent. People do not have to go to the streets, but it could be civil disobedience, where we withdraw our essential support to the government so that it realizes they need to listen to the people. Because so far, the government has refused totally to listen to the Kenyans.
I see among your demands here, Bishop, that you are demanding publication of the names of those convicted or charged with mega corruption and also the publication of all the state appointments he has made since he took office. Don't you think that this is a broad demand to make of the government?
We must make, because these people are paid by the public funds. And the way they are appointed, the appointments are made as skewed to benefit only a certain section of the community in this country, especially from his own ethnic community. And this is what we are against. We say all Kenyans, those who are qualified, they should be given equal opportunity so that they can as well also serve the nation.
Bishop, I want you to respond to this criticism that some people have made that the church or the bishops, your duty is to minister to the people and not to meddle into politics.
I think that is misconceived. One thing is, we are dealing with people who are marginalized. We are serving the people who cannot afford even a plate of meal in a day. We are serving the people who are paying taxes, but they don't see value for the taxes they pay. Someone has to stand in the gap for them, and that's where we come in.
The Right Reverend Professor David Kodia is the Anglican Bishop of Bondo, Kenya. President Ruto has spent the past few days rejecting the Catholic bishop's criticism of him. Kenya news media report that in a speech on Friday, Ruto asked the clergy and leaders to work with him to make Kenya a country all can be proud of. He accused them of not being factual. Defenders of the president also have said it is not possible to correct decades of problems in just 2 years. Burundian President Evariste Ndayishimiye has ordered the release of about 41% of the country's prison population of 13,211, those charged with minor crimes. News reports said the president hopes the amnesty will enable those free to change their behavior and contribute to the country's development. Agathon Rwasa is the leader of Burundi's main opposition party, the National Freedom Council, the CNL. He tells me that the release of prisoners does not include those arrested for their political beliefs and affiliation.
We appreciate that President Ndayishimiye has fought about those who are in jails. Because after all, the jails in Burundi are overpopulated, since we have more than 12,000 prisoners, while the prisons could accommodate almost 4,000 people. Nevertheless, we cannot be satisfied by the single fact that he has released prisoners when we have many people who have been in jails for no reason, just because they are from the opposition. They have not commit any crime, but just for set cases, these guys are in jail when they are not guilty. I think if President Ndayishimiye would be willing to help Burundi feel at ease, he would first of all release those ones instead of just pretending to release people just because their misbehavior, because they were thieves or they have been conning people. Because those who are in jail without any crime on their charge are the ones who are suffering much than those who have been there because of their acts that they have committed. Nevertheless, we could just encourage the government to think about also those who are in jail just because of their political beliefs and to release them also.
You said that those pardons do not include political prisoners. Who are some of the political prisoners that you are referring to?
There are many people who are in jail, mainly from CNL political party, who have not committed any crime. They are in the prison of Bujumbura, in Ngozi, Gitega, and elsewhere in the country. So if those don't deserve to have the mercy of the president, finally, who will believe in his goodwill if he cannot release people whom he knows are in jail while they have not committed any crime? There are many, he knows them. That's why we say, okay, he has done something good, because nobody should live in jail, but he would better be kind to everyone and not just be selective, as he has shown with this release he has operated.
Agathon Rwasa is the leader of Burundi's main opposition National Freedom Council party. He was speaking with us from Bujumbura, Burundi. The Burundian government has previously committed itself to improving human rights as well as good governance and the rule of law. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 19. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Zambia, a leading pan-African governance activist is calling for a constitutional amendment that sets term limits for members of parliament. Sikwindi Situla says the move will broaden the political space for other citizens to participate in governance. His suggestion has generated a debate across the country. Viewer's Peter Clotte reached Situla for more about his call for parliamentary term limits.
In the interest of refreshing the ideas all the time and for the benefit of the larger population of Zambia, basically, you know, we have had members of parliament that have been serving in parliament for so long a time. And I think that it defeats the whole process of recognizing that young people also have to get an opportunity to serve and bring their ideas to the table in parliament. For that reason, I have been, you know, an advocate, you know, of that change in parliament and in the broader reforms of our constitutional reforms as well as parliamentary reforms, you know, that it is important to get, you know, people to serve, you know, on a limited term so that they can allow other people also to participate in the governance of their country.
Will the term limits be equal to that of the president's term limits?
My view, my opinion is that it shouldn't be equal per se, because I think you need to have a flow of information, wisdom, if you like. You know, there must be a way that you can get a maximum of 3 terms, a limit for the members of parliament, which is 5 years each. So a maximum of 15 years, really, that an MP should be able to serve and, you know, totally not be able to stand again to give room for others, you know, to participate. If you want to argue from a point of view of, you know, getting, you know, to transfer information or basically share experiences widely enough, so that will create the required dovetailing of the two institutions, which is the president and parliament, in terms of not creating the information gap as it may arise otherwise.
How beneficial will this be for the people of Zambia? Because some also argue that experience matters and that those who have been in parliament for a while are given the opportunity to groom the young ones or the new ones that come in parliament, and that comes with experience in parliamentary procedures.
If you cannot say you have had the experience in 5 years, you know, you certainly will not have experience in 30 years. But the bottom line is that I think if you have served in the House for 5 years, no matter how difficult it is for you to learn, you'll have learned enough, and then you'll have had enough lessons to pass on to, you know, other generations, the succeeding generations. And also, it doesn't mean that you'll have a fed off of members of parliament at once, more or less saying that the entire parliament doesn't come back. No, different people have been, you know, going into parliament on different times. You know, and I think that being able to exchange leadership is very important. As you know, from a position of leadership, people can lift themselves out of poverty in terms of being able to argue in the interest of that demographic group.
Is your call generating a groundswell of support in Zambia?
Apparently, it was just more or less an expression of opinion by somebody who's interested in governance or the governance activist and everything else. And I'm highly indebted that many radio stations and televisions, you know, have actually been, you know, calling me for interviews. I didn't know it would create this kind of traction as we're beginning to experience now.
Sekwindi Setula is a leading pan-African governance activist in Zambia. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotte. Nigerians are celebrating the success of beauty pageant competitor Chidema Adesina at the Miss Universe contest in Mexico on Saturday. Adesina fell just short of the title, being named first runner-up, but was still crowned to Miss Universe Africa and Oceania. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Nigerian beauty queen Stephanie Kingsley was glued to her social media feed Saturday as she monitored the Miss Universe pageant competition. She says her heart pounded with anxiety as 23-year-old Chidima Adesina progressed to the top five and later emerged as the first runner-up, only behind Miss Denmark Victoria Kajer Favik.
I was talking to my friend in the UK. We were like on the phone for almost 2 hours, and we were just screaming, and it was all goosebumps. As a pageant girl, I'm really proud. I'm grateful. It opens doors for us. You know, it's been a struggle.
Adesina won support from millions of Nigerians after a citizenship dispute forced her to step down from the Miss Universe South Africa race in early August. Adesina was born to a Nigerian father and a South African mother with Mozambican roots. She said she was concerned for her safety and the well-being of her family after she was targeted in xenophobic online attacks. Shortly after stepping down, Nigerian pageant organizers invited her to represent her father's country. Kingsley says Adesina showed extraordinary strength and courage.
She's a really strong person mentally, because I don't even want to think about how she would have tried so hard to maintain sanity. She was able to achieve this groundbreaking record for Nigeria that we, the pageant girls, have been hungry for since 2001.
2001 was when Nigerian model Agbani Darego won the Miss World pageant. Adesina is the first Nigerian and West African to place so highly in Miss Universe contest. On Sunday, the Nigerians in Diaspora Commission, NIDCOM, praised Adesina for her fortitude. Smart Courage, a Nigerian who runs an agency that trains beauty queens for the runway, says discrimination among Africans is a serious issue.
The aim of pageantry is to help work on social issues, especially those that affect women. Every time we say Black Lives Matter, but we also have an internal issue where Africans do not see other Africans as being African enough. And that is a conversation we need to start having. Because if we do not rectify such problems within the African community, it's going to be very difficult to say you're speaking up for Black people around the country.
South Africa's Home Affairs Department is still investigating Adesina's mother for alleged citizenship fraud. Adesina is not accused of wrongdoing, as she was a baby in 2001 when authorities allege her mother committed identity theft to register their citizenship. Neither Adesina nor her mother have commented on the allegations. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
President-elect Donald Trump will come into office in January 2025 with unified control of the U.S. Congress. Republicans will hold majorities in both the Senate and the House as a result of a mandate from American voters. The U.S. congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
The new leader of the incoming Republican majority U.S. Senate. John Thune is the incoming Senate Majority Leader.
We have a mandate from the American people, a mandate not only to clean up the mess left by the Biden-Harris-Schumer agenda, but also to deliver on President Trump's priorities.
Thune takes the top leadership role in the Senate after Mitch McConnell served in that position for 18 years. And he is already facing his first test. President-elect Donald Trump has proposed bypassing the Senate's constitutional role of approving cabinet nominees. Senator John Thune.
The Senate has an advise and consent role in the Constitution, so we will do everything we can to process his noms quickly, get them installed in their position so they can begin to implement his agenda.
Democrats lost their majority and will hold at least 47 seats in the new Senate. Chuck Schumer is the current majority leader in the U.S. Senate.
The American people have presented us with a challenge. We must learn from it.
Trump had unified control of government during the first 2 years of his first term. But one analyst says that does not always mean the White House will get what it wants on Capitol Hill. Casey Burgat is Legislative Affairs Program Director at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C.
Mitch McConnell had said then that he supports the president's agenda. He'll work with them. But then we saw from nominations to policies that they will provide no votes if they think the president has gone too far.
Republicans also secured a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives, earning praise from Trump.
It's nice to win.
The president-elect endorsed Speaker of the House Mike Johnson to lead again.
I believe it will be the most consequential Congress in the modern era, most consequential administration in the modern era, because frankly, we have to fix almost every area of public policy.
But Republicans hold a much narrower majority in the House with only a handful more seats than Democrats who vowed to keep fighting. Democratic Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal.
The Congressional Progressive Caucus will continue to be ferocious defenders of the working class and poor people.
The new 119th U.S. Congress will be sworn into office on January 3rd.
Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Tuesday, November 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington. Presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.
This is Lina Khmudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17.